This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Good Wednesday to you. As we continue along on Sports Map Radio this week, looking at not only the NFL games coming up this weekend, but the ones that just occurred, including Monday night where the Cleveland Browns lost Nick Chubb in their game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And it is a reminder once again, and on a topic that we talked about all summer long, of running backs. How valuable are they really? And that's the big question that a lot of NFL teams have been dealing with and a lot of players have to be dealing with, and there really isn't an answer to this. I remember talking about every single, you know, of the franchise tagged players that occurred over the summer, and the conversations at running backs in the past and running backs currently, like Derrick Henry, we're talking about the future of the position. That if you are a young football player, that you would be best advised not to be a running back going into the NFL. If you have talent to make it to that level, being a professional football player, you are better off doing something else in some other position than be a running back in this league. The durability, you don't last. Payment, you don't make it. You know, you never get the big contract. Because right now, the Cleveland Browns, they did give Nick Chubb that big contract. Nick Chubb was one of the last ones to get a nice deal to play running back in the National Football League. And now he's suffering his second knee injury, on the same knee, mind you, and is done for the season. And this goes right back to why owners weren't doing this in the first place, is that they were saying, look, in the end, unfortunately, we may like you. We may, you know, really enjoy you being on the team. And when you're healthy, where you're a very valuable part of the team, but we know that you can disappear from the team really quickly. And now Jerome Ford is going to be the new running back, which is what happens. Saquon Barkley is going to miss at least 3 weeks with an ankle sprain. And this is really problematic for the players who play that position, because you're going to want to rush back from injuries just to prove how valuable you can still be to the team. You know, we talk about the term next man up and how I really don't like it, because it's not real. Coaches use it because they have to use it, because in the end, they can't really say we don't have a roster that's capable of it. There's some exceptions where coaches will remind people, look, I can't replace this guy. You know, we're not going to replace this guy. And they kind of did that with Nick Chubb. Kevin Stefanski pointed out, we're not going to replace Nick Chubb with one person. We're going to have to do it with a couple of people. But Jerome Ford is now running back one in the Browns' backfield. But the reality is that position, owners are treating it as if it is a next man up situation. That in the end, they can just find production from other people or a combination of other people. And so that's why when you're a running back, you go to the table to get a new deal, you're very unlikely to get it. Because one, you have a very short shelf life in this league. And two, they know that in the end, what do you provide? You provide a certain statistic. And if they can get that certain statistic in a combination of other people, that's better for them, especially when that general cost is low. I'm not going to get the same value if I'm the Jets with Zach Wilson at quarterback than I did with Aaron Rodgers, but I can statistically replace running backs with maybe two other cheaper running backs. If that's how I'm devising my offense. It stinks because the Chubb injury is a combination of showing us how valuable running backs can be, at the same time showing us how disposable running backs can be. The Cleveland Browns are not going to be the same team without Nick Chubb. But at the same time, teams that are going to suffer the same kind of thing with their running back who didn't get Nick Chubb's contract are going to just find a ways to move on with the position with someone else. It will be a next man up situation. And that's really troubling for the league. Because think about this. Look at the way just in the first couple of weeks, the first couple of games of the NFL season, we've already talked about how important the running game has been. The Steelers Monday night had one rushing yard at halftime. That was a big deal. Why can't Matt Canada find ways to use Najee Harris? Well, wait, hold on. Aren't we a league where running backs are not valuable at all? Najee Harris this summer was getting worried about where he actually is in terms of being able to get paid by the Steelers. And yet commentaries were Matt Canada has to get Najee Harris more involved in the offense. Look at what happened with the Jets against the Dallas Cowboys. Zach Wilson's first start since Aaron Rodgers' injury. Where was Breece Hall? Where's the running game? Why are you forcing it downfield? Why is Nathaniel Hackett running the same offensive game plan with Zach Wilson that he would have had for Aaron Rodgers? So again, you're already starting to see in two, and of course the Nick Chubb injury. You're already seeing in the first 2 weeks, where are the running backs? Why aren't the running backs? How that Nick Chubb? Oh my God, Deshaun Watson is now going to have to earn his money. Deshaun Watson had to earn his money before Nick Chubb's injury. Don't say he has to earn his money now. He always had to earn his money. But that's the narrative. The conversation is now how valuable the running game is. But yet, in the end, owners will not turn to these players and make them very, very rich. We'll make them rich, but they won't make them very rich. They won't give them the kind of security because they know they're a Nick Chubb away from having a lot of dead money going absolutely nowhere. And that's why this position is going to start to fall apart and more years get ticked off the calendar. You get 5 years down the road, I really wonder how valuable running backs are going to be. I wonder if it is a situation that can change, but I doubt it. I really doubt it. And I don't know what the Players Association can do. People have said, well, the union's got to get on this. I don't know what that means. Right? We talked over the summer. Can the union negotiate minimum salaries for? I doubt it. I doubt that will go through. So what can the union do? They can't really do anything. I guess the only thing the union can do is fight franchise tags. Fight the second franchise tag. But as we know, if you've been following the labor negotiations between the players union and NFL owners, if you really kind of followed that, you've always known that the players get something at a huge expense. They get valuable things, but at the same time, it comes at a heavy cost. They've gotten better practices. They've gotten less practices. They've gotten less contact in practice. Like they've gotten a bunch of things that coaches have to be very concerned about when they get to training camp and off-season workouts, whatever it is they do. A lot of the off-season has been heavily negotiated by the players union because they want to make sure that their players are ready to go at game time and they're not going to lose players in practice. So you got limited padded practices, limited contact drills, all those kind of things that they've negotiated. But what cost? Some of it has been, not directly, but in the end, all of the things that they want come at the cost of, well, we're going to put this system in place that allows us to franchise tag you. And, oh, by the way, lets us franchise tag you again. What you get in return for that is the second franchise tag is usually a cost that's astronomically crazy. So it's very unlikely that we'll do those unless we're really committed to that player. But it's usually something 1 year, no guarantee after that, but 1 year of incredibly high dollar figure. So I don't know what the union can do here. I don't. But I know this. The more times a team goes, hey, Jerome Ford, you're now running back one, and if they're fine, then guess what? You're going to see more and more players say, you know what? I'd rather be a this or that or whatever it may be. I'm going to have to learn to catch to be a tight end, or I'm going to have to learn to be a wide receiver. I'm going to have to learn. I don't want to be a running back. And it's going to go all the way down to the high school level. And I believe Derrick Henry was correct. So it's just going to show you that the position is still valuable. It's still really important. I know we talked about this. If you grew up in a certain era, the running back was almost as important as the quarterback in the National Football League. I know that sounds crazy, but it used to be that way. It used to be a time where Walter Payton was as valuable as Dave Craig under center, or whoever it was for the Bears back in the day. But that's not the case now. And it really shouldn't have been the case. But that's just the way the league was. You needed to run the football. And you needed strong running backs. And that's where you had the emergence of Walter Payton and Earl Campbell and, you know, Barry Sanders later on, and Tony Dorsett and Franco Harris, you name them. But now, obviously, the switch is we want more downfield game. We want more aerial attacks. Wide receivers are starting to get paid more money. And, of course, quarterbacks who have always been the most important person on the team are now getting their $50 million. But running backs, if you can't even get 10, you can't get 11, 12, you can't get a four-year deal at $12 million. No. Why? Because one play at the goal line with Nick Chubb, and all of a sudden, everyone goes, yeah, we'll see see what happens. They take more hits than anybody. They're always getting hit like that. And they're always going down. So that is the talking point that you'll start hearing more and more as the season progresses. More of where's the running game, where's the running game. But if you know where it's been heading, yeah, well, where the running game is going is not good for the position. All right, so we're going to look ahead at some games this weekend. College slate is huge. Ohio State and Notre Dame are playing a fantastic game this weekend. I mean, think about it. If you're Ohio State and you get a schedule that is as loaded with the conference opponents as Michigan, of course, and Penn State, and you schedule Notre Dame, that is an awesome opportunity. It's a good opportunity for Notre Dame, too, that still does not have a conference championship. It still plays an independent schedule. It's one of the few that continues to do that. And to be able to get Ohio State, it's a good weekend. And, of course, Colorado's going to Oregon. You've got UCLA heading to Salt Lake City. So we'll take a look at those as well. Also, when we come back, we'll talk more about the looking ahead to some of the games in Week 3 of the National Football League. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call. All right, thanks for joining us as we continue its Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Looking forward to Ohio State Notre Dame on Saturday night.
That should be good.
Should be good. Good for the two teams to go, hey, why not? Let's put this on the schedule.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Like that is at least the benefit of having the playoff, right? I think that we've been saying that for the last 10 years, almost 10 years of having the playoff. Is now schools are like, you know what? Let's go play some tougher. They want us to play some tougher opponents. We have tough opponents on our conference schedule, but let's not get lazy. Let's schedule something out of conference. It's kind of tough.
Yeah. And the timing is right. I mean, we know that the first 2 weeks first three, if you count week zero, are going to be cupcake matches.
Yeah.
We got a couple of treats last week, but last week traditionally is, all right, let's just get through this weekend of college football.
Most teams playing some salt. Yeah, you get a couple of tough games, but they're like hard to pick through. Most teams are playing.
But I feel like from week three on, that's when we start to get.
Once you get into conference schedule games, you're like, okay, now we're in the conference. But this is not quite that for Ohio State, so they're not there yet.
Should be right. I mean, yeah. Everyone's been.
They
begging.
Should be. Everybody else is doing it.
Everyone else has been begging Notre Dame to join a conference for years.
Yeah,
and Big Ten would make all the sense, but
if I'm Notre Dame, I don't go anywhere near a conference. I love it. I love having my own money, my own deal, my own media deal. I don't have to share it with anybody. Yeah, and now I've got a 12-team playoff. I don't even need to win a conference championship. They never go into a conference. Well, I shouldn't say never. I mean, maybe one day they'll go, okay. But Notre Dame is, how do I say this? I want to say this right because it's they're sort of a victim of their own hubris. Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean? Like Notre Dame, you surround yourself, anybody from Notre Dame, you know they're from Notre Dame. I remember when Notre Dame came to Air Force. Okay, so I was with the Air Force. I was the pregame guy for the Air Force football. And part of my job was I used to broadcast from the parking lot of the Air Force Academy. We had like this roving unit. It was really kind of fun. And it had a producer with me that would he would find people to interview and whatnot. It was really cool. It was kind of a cool, fun party. And we would go around to different things that Air Force had set up in the parking lot. And we would kind of interview people. It was kind of neat. And that was part of the thing. And Notre Dame was coming into town. And Notre Dame rented out space in the parking lot for a tent to sell Notre Dame merchandise. They did this on a road trip. Like, if you could buy Notre Dame shirts, sweatshirts, hats, whatever, from a tent that they had in the parking lot at the Air Force Academy. And I'm like, I've been to a lot of games. I've never seen this. I've never seen an opposing team show up and go, yeah, we got a pretty good fan base here, and we're selling gear. And they did. They just sold the gear. They're Notre Dame. I mean, they had the pipeline to all the Catholic schools back in the day, right? It was the only place you wanted to go if you were part of that sort of tradition. But they have this media deal with NBC. I mean, they don't have a media deal with the CW, right? They have a media deal with NBC. So if they were to join the conference, they would go, okay, let me just get this straight. I join the Big Ten. I bring NBC, but let's say we got to dump that for your new deal with ESPN. And that deal gets raised up because of our presence here. And you want me, Notre Dame, to get the same cut of the pie as Rutgers. That's not happening. Sorry, that's not happening. I bring in way more value because we have a global fan base. And not only do we have a global fan base, they watch everything we do. And you want me to be in a conference where we're splitting this pie equally? You got to be kidding. And that's the way they feel. And that's just the way they are. They're like, there's zero reason. They're like, here's the fun part about being at Notre Dame. When you need to be in a conference for other things, we are. We're in the ACC. So our basketball team gets to contribute part of the ACC basketball. Our swimming team and golf team and all this, I'm playing in the ACC. But football, where everyone around the globe watches us, I don't know. And that's what they've always done. But it has hurt them at times because creating your own independent schedule, even though you can get USC on board and Stanford back in the day, whatever, sometimes those teams are up and sometimes those teams aren't up. And you don't get the benefit of a conference where you can say, well, Michigan won the Big Ten and the Big Ten's kind of down. You know what I mean? Like you don't get the benefit of that. Your schedule is what you created. And if what you created isn't as good, you better win all your games. Notre Dame suffered a bit when it came to the national playoff picture because they didn't play a conference tournament. How many times have we seen a team get into the playoff because of the conference tournament, because of their championship presence, right? Think about, remember the first ever college football playoff? The Big 12 didn't have a conference championship game. Remember that? Baylor and TCU. And the Big 12 commissioner was like, you should take them both. And the committee took neither one of them. Instead, who did they take? Ohio State. Why? Because Ohio State was playing in the Big Ten championship game and won. And Notre Dame would do this too. Notre Dame would have pretty good seasons, and then they would play their last game against like USC in November, and there was nothing on the table. There would be nothing. They'd have no more games left. And then next thing you know, somebody won the SEC championship game and a little bit of an upset, and all of a sudden they're in the picture, or Big Ten or the Big 12, now that they've got a championship game, and all of a sudden they're getting kicked out. So yeah, it's a little bit of that hubris that they had that has been like, well, we can't participate in a conference championship game at the last week of the season. So now that there's 12 teams, this is much easier, right? We're going to talk a little bit about this when we get to the Mel Tucker story at Michigan State, right? Mel Tucker, we'll get into the details as why Mel Tucker got fired in a bit, but overall, Mel Tucker was in a great position at Michigan State. Right, he had a $90 million contract. In 2001, he had the team nationally ranked. They had beaten Michigan. Everyone was loving what the Spartans were doing. But in the end, Michigan State is not Michigan. They're not Ohio State. They're not Alabama. Every now and then they can get good. And when they're good, they're good. But the reality of it is they were a team that was had a lot of potholes to get over in order to get to the college football playoff and play for a national championship. But now that you have 12 teams in this thing, you don't have to be perfect. You do not have to go undefeated. You do not have to have, you can suffer a blemish or two and still be strong enough to get it. It is now opened the door. That aspect of college football has now opened the door for teams to go, hey, you know what? So what if we lost on the road to Ole Miss? So what if Florida State beat us at home? As long as we can control the rest of the games and not have too many losses, we're in this thing. And you know the argument I make all the time about the college basketball tournament, which is don't whine if you can't get in this. I don't want to hear it. I hate it. The whining, the Dick Vitale getting on TV screaming that so-and-so got robbed and Jay Billis, so-and-so, this is an outrage. It's not an outrage when you have 68 teams, and I know a lot of them are, you know, 30-something of them are guaranteed because of conference tournament wins. But if you can't get into that college basketball tournament, that's on you. But the same thing is going to happen in the college football playoff. I don't really care about the 13th team or the 14th team whining on television that they couldn't get into this thing. Like, I can't cry for every single program that can't get into the playoff. And it's going to happen every year. Every year there's going to be a 14th team, a 13th team, a 15th team going, we had a better divide by seven statistic. And Nate, you're going to hear that every single year. And it's up to us as a sports public to either go, oh, I should write my congressman. Or go, yeah, you know what? Sorry, win one more game and you would have been in this thing. Maybe if you converted that third down late against Penn State, we might be talking about you. That's the way. But the reality of it is, 12 teams are getting in next year. 12. That means there's going to be a lot of two-loss teams, some three-loss teams that have a really good resume are going to be competing for a national championship. You know what a dream that is for these coaches? You know how fantastic that is for coaches with programs that are just like a step below, not quite the bottom feeders of the conference, but you know who they are. You know what I mean? Like, SEC is a perfect example of this. There's like in the West, there's like LSU, Alabama, but then there's like Arkansas that will have like a good year, one year, and they're just not quite Alabama good, you know? Or like Florida. They'll have a really good year, but they're not quite Georgia good. Now they get to get into this thing. So, all right, coming up next, I went down a weird rabbit hole last night, and I got to tell you, I really enjoyed it. Very fun stuff. Plus, we also will get to the Mel Tucker situation. He has been fired. He has 7 days to show why he shouldn't have been fired. We'll talk about that as we continue.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Philip on Twitter. Okay, so if you're committed enough for a player that you could entertain a second franchise tag when most players don't want the first one, pay the player. Yeah, that's why you don't see a lot of players getting that second franchise tag. The second franchise tag is a lot more than, like, you get the average salary of that position in your first franchise tag, well, you get a lot more in your second. Teams don't really want to do the second one.
I mean, the only time you ever see a second franchise tag is usually to a quarterback.
Right, yeah.
It's because they're like, all right, we're still at an impasse, but we want you, but, you know, maybe you'll stink a little bit more and then that money will come down.
That's right. That's what it is. Is most of it is the quarterback, you know, it's not used a lot because you usually franchise tag a player and then you work out something or you're willing to part ways with that player. But the second one is like, you know, the second one is designed for if I franchise tag you and then I really, really want to keep you, I'll be working on that because I'm not going to pay you, you know, double or close, you know, a high dollar figure for 1 year when I could just get you cheaper over 3 years, let's say, you know, what a position. So you don't really see it a lot. All right, so yesterday, man, I texted you about this. I went down a YouTube rabbit hole where somebody posted, I don't know why it showed up on my algorithms, but I saw it and I watched the first one and then it just opened up a floodgate. Somebody was posting old episodes of Price is Right on YouTube. Complete episodes, complete with commercials. I don't know, how do people get these? Like, how do people get like 1977 episode of The Price is Right, complete with a Campbell's soup commercial with John Turturro? It was great. It was great. I saw the first episode of The Price is Right, 1972. Now, there was an old Price is Right, but this was the new Price is Right. And Bob Barker kept saying that when he came out on stage. And I just watched it. And I watched it for one reason and one reason only. I wanted to see the prices of these things that were in 1972. And then I watched one from 77, 81. Like, I was just bouncing around watching a bunch of them just to see the different prices and the different products. And it was a dream come true, man. It was an unbelievable time warp. It was crazy. The first thing that the people are bidding on, first show, 1972, four contestants. First thing they bid on, a fur coat, 1972. Muskrat fur, whatever it was, beautiful, beautiful coat. Everyone gives their price. Actual retail price of the fur coat, $550. I went right to Google. How much is $550 in today's money from 1972? That coat was $4,800 in value in 1972. And the woman who won it was like, all right, you just won something that costs $5,000 in today's dollars. And she won a car. The car, she played the game. Now, the cool thing about this was Bob Barker in the early days had to explain every game. You know how, like, Drew Carey doesn't explain anything, right?
Yeah, he explains, like, the newer ones because they try to make it a little more complex. But, like,
when they're playing the mountain climber game, people go, I know exactly what this is.
Plinko shows up.
Right. Yep, like, I know how to play this.
This is how you win a chip. Other than that, you're on your own.
So,
but no, that's why, I mean, the game that I always wanted to play was that dice rolling game.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they, back in the day, it was always just four digits because that's how much the car was. It was only
That's exactly right.
And so they still do four digits today. They just give you that first one now.
The woman is playing a game where all 10 digits are in the prices of three things.
Okay.
So you have to guess a number, and you have four digits for the car. You have three digits for some other item that's up that she's bidding on, and then you have three digits in a piggy bank, and the piggy bank is a dollar and change. So the one you complete first is the one you're going to win, right? So she goes like seven, and Bob Barker goes, "Show us the seven," and every number is different. So it's 10 numbers, and every number is different. So she gets some for the item, and she gets some for the car, and then she wins the car. The car was $2,000 in 1972. It was a new car. It was in 1972. And she's just elated. She's like losing her mind. She won a car. I'm like, heck yeah, she won a car in 1972. Yeah, that must have been amazing. But the other things were a sewing machine.
Yeah.
A sewing machine in 19 was $180. What was minimum wage in 1972? $1.50? Like, if your wife wanted a sewing machine in 1972, she was either not getting it or you had that thing on payment plans for the next 10 years. $180 for a sewing machine. An electric typewriter, which was probably from outer space when they had this in 1972, was $200. I saw an episode from 1981. They had an Apple computer. 1981 Apple computer. $1,100 was the price of that computer. Guy won it. A guy won it. This woman won. One of the items that they had was this globe, this like wooden looking globe, but it wasn't a globe. It was a bar, you know, like the globe like popped open.
Right. Yeah.
And you could store drinks and ice in it. $700 that thing cost. I was like, who bought this stuff in 81? We hadn't even reached the point in the 1980s where like the stock market was going crazy and like Wall Street was booming and everyone was making money and buying Porsches. Like 81, we were still kind of broke. Who's buying this stuff back then? There was a van, and this is like the old vans. You know, you remember the old vans that had like Lazy Boys in them?
Yes.
Like comfortable seats?
Yeah.
And like cabinets? Like little cabinets and a bed? So this woman is up for a van. It's just Showcase Showdown, I think it was. The van was $14,000 in 1981. $14,000. What's that? What was that? $100,000 car in today's money? It was great. It was unbelievable. It was so fun to watch this stuff. Plus, here's the thing. I'm watching Bob Barker because Barker was, okay, so he just passed away not that long ago at 99. So that meant like he was close to 50 when he started hosting this new Price is Right in 1972. It was probably like 47. He's as smooth as ice, man, in the early days. He is as smooth as ice. He's got this woman coming up to him, handing him the microphone. He just kind of looks at her. Like, it's 1972. Like, all sexual harassment stuff is, like, wide open. You know?
Well, there's no such thing.
He just gives her a look. It's like Anchorman. Remember in Anchorman?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, like, beautiful women come on stage. It's like, it's smooth as a cucumber, man. This guy's 46, 47 years old. Some 22-year-old is up on the stage bouncing up and down because she's about ready to win a car, and he's just like, and Uncle Bob's going to give you one. Yeah, it's great. It's awesome to watch him. And by the way, it's also, there was one lady that came up. I think this was in the 1977 episode I was watching. This one woman comes up. She's pretty. She's young. She's got blonde hair, and she's pretty. And her husband's in the audience, and her husband's just clapping. He's so excited. And so he says, "What do you do, Mary?" or whatever her name was. And she's like, "I'm a housewife." And he goes, "Oh, so you must be really excited to have won that dishwasher." No problems whatsoever. In fact, that's what you probably would have said to a woman in 1977 if she won a dishwasher. And her reaction was, "Yeah, we don't have one." And he's like, "Well, now you do. Makes your chores easier, I guess." Total. You can watch that. Take a college kid and have them watch 1977 Price is Right. Their jaw is going to hit the floor.
What is that?
They're like, "You could actually say that to people? Yes, you could have, and no one complained."
No. Nah. It's the norm.
That guy, think about this, kid. That TV game show host just implied to that woman that her daily household chores are now going to be easier for her husband to walk into his clean house in 1977, and no one batted an eye. That's how it just was back then. Seriously, it's like watching Family Feud when Richard Dawson's making out with every woman that's on the set.
Yes.
In front of their husbands.
Yep.
And no one cared.
It was the 70s. That's just Richard being Richard.
My wife asked me, she goes, "What are you watching?" Because I kept going, "What?" Like, they were like, "Actual retail price of this cabinet is $330. I was like, "What? I wouldn't pay that today. Let alone if I was making $11,000 a year in 1977. $300 for a cabinet that held dishes. Crazy.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, Philip on Twitter. No, it's all about Plinko. Outside of that, I like the numbers game where you started with $7 $1 bills and lose a dollar for every incorrect number on the price. Yeah, I remember that one.
That's another game that really has not changed at all.
Yeah. As long as you had the dollar left in the end, you won the car.
It's always been $7.
That's right. Steve Harvey tried that today. The husband would slap his mustache off. I know. How did Richard Dawson get away with that? Because he was Richard Dawson?
That's an amazing... I would love for like a behind the scenes look. Like, where did it come from?
Yeah, because
there's no other host before him ever did that.
There must have just been a different level of celebrity power back in the day that doesn't really work today.
And let's be honest, he's not that great looking of a guy.
No, no. But I think when you're maybe when you're just like the Johnsons from, you know, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, having Richard Dawson kiss your wife on the lips is something you would actually brag about to your buddies at the plant. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because he's a celebrity. So you're like, yeah, he kissed my wife on the old lips right in front of me. Yeah. It wasn't weird at all. Not at all. He just went up to her and she reached in too. It was really weird. She leaned in for it.
And that's why I loved the mockery of European Vacation when I think the actor's John Astin. When he was doing that and just went to town on the girls.
He was making out with with Clark Griswold's wife
and
the daughter. Game shows. How wild. Game shows are nuts. I don't know what made me. I could not get enough of this yesterday. I just couldn't. Last night, I was just watching. I couldn't get enough of it. It was crazy. I mean, I'm a huge Price is Right fan. I don't watch it as much anymore, but I was a huge Price is Right fan back in the day. But I could not stop. I'm so thankful for YouTube, man. We were just talking like these were complete episodes that somebody must have had on somehow, and they uploaded them. Maybe the company did it. I don't know. But they came with commercials, right? So you had commercials from the 70s, 80s, whenever you were watching it. And I was telling you that one of the commercials in the 1980s, 81 episode was for a gigantic stereo system.
Yeah.
I mean, just this gigantic turntable, cassette decks, radio, all the things no one really could understand, like all the little treble bass things nobody ever did anything with. And then two gigantic speakers. And I think James Earl Jones did the voice of the commercial, and it made it sound like this is a must-have. Like, you have to have this. This is the thing you need in your house. This is the ultimate, ultimate music entertainment system. And it was huge. I mean, it was gigantic. And it, like, one guy on the Price, he won a color TV. That thing is as big as my room here. This big TV. Remember the big, gigantic screens, like, that were thick? Remember, you used to push them? I think my wife had one in our early days of marriage. It was like the biggest. But in the 1980s, they were like cabinets. They were like as big as like an armoire pushing a big TV. That thing was a fortune. But yeah, no, it's. I just told I told you off the air. I was like, I think I'm going to go down the Wheel of Fortune route with the old, where they used to buy stuff. Like, they used to get the Dalmatian and the. And the other items where they used to buy, they used to go, hey, all right, let's go buy some stuff with your winnings with a young Vanna White and Pat Sajak. Now that that's coming to an end. Well, I guess Vanna's sticking around, huh?
Yeah. But okay.
Ryan Seacrest couldn't get somebody else in there?
Maybe he'll bring somebody. I mean, she's like, she's institutionalized in there. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what her deal is if she doesn't get the pay raise.
Right.
Because she's like looking for more. And I didn't realize, but it's a considerable difference. I mean, I think Sajak was getting like $15 million a year. She was only getting three.
She's getting three to turn letters and not say a word.
I know. Well, no.
Pat Sajak at least had to entertain us.
She had a speaking role.
Oh, at the end.
Yeah, at the very end. She always had to put up with Sajak's corny jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
But in a way, I would almost want Sajak to go to her and go, hey, let's just retire together.
Yeah, let's get out of this together. We've all made enough money. Let's get out of here. Done it for a long time. They did it since like the early 80s. Imagine doing that same job over and over again. Is that good or bad? Like, I can't think. If somebody came to a young lady today and said, I got a job for you. You're going to turn letters on a word-guessing, phrase-guessing game. The letters are just going to light up, and you don't even have to know where the letters are. They're just going to light up, and you turn them. We're going to pay you $3 million a year, but here's the catch. You're not going to do anything else with your life but that.
Yeah.
There's no movie roles. You're not going to have a singing contract. You're not going to model. You're not going to do anything. You're going to be a household name, but you're just going to turn letters every time we film this, and you're going to live in a life where you make millions of dollars. But I mean it. When you're 67, you're still going to be doing this. So think about that for a second. Like, it's easy to say yes today, but you're going to be 42, 47, 51, 58, 60, 60. This is all you're going to do. When you put it in that context, I don't know if that's a great deal. Like, it's, you know.
Well, she's done, like, I think she's done cameos of herself.
Yeah, right. She's done cameos of herself, but
she doesn't have a starring role in anything
NBC's
else.
NBC's Sunday night movie featuring Vanna White as a jilted lover.
I don't think she's ever had, like, a talk show of her own or even inkling of a talk show. And let's face it, she doesn't even turn letters anymore.
Right.
It's a touchscreen.
Yeah, they don't even need her. They could just do it themselves.
Yeah. No, that's very true.
They used to need her. It was an actual box. She had to move.
I wonder if that was part of the negotiation when she went in there. Guys, I've been making $3 million a year for doing this.
Can you give me a raise?
I need a raise. And they're looking at her like, Vanna, we don't need you anymore. We're paying you $3 million to keep you around.
They should have been like, Vanna, we haven't needed you since 1986. You know, the technology has always existed.
Yeah.
That we could have just turned the letters ourselves.
I mean, think about it. Family Feud back in the 80s. That thing flipped. The board flipped on its own.
Like, we didn't need somebody to get on a ladder and go, survey says, hold on 1 second, flip.
Yeah.
Like, no. That's so true. She's literally done a worthless job for 40 years, 50 years almost. Well, 40 years. And she was not needed at all.
No, and
other to wear gowns and flip, like, just to be somebody who did that.
And making $3 million a year where she only works 4 days a month.
This is a wild.
It's the greatest
that is a
gig.
Wild existence.
It's the greatest gig in human history.
Yeah, it's one of the craziest jobs ever put
on
paper.
How fast would you sign up if someone said, hey, Tony, for $3 million a year and all you have to do is work 4 days a month, you taking it?
Yeah,
depending on what it is.
But like I was saying, what if they said, you don't be bored with this.
Right.
40 years you're going to be doing this. Look how quickly Joe Buck did a talk show on, what, HBO? The guy has one of the most plum assignments in all of sports broadcasting. And what did he do? Well, I wanted to do a talk show on HBO.
Yeah.
They all want to. After a while, you get a little tired of, like, doing the same thing over and over.
Especially him now. I mean, before, at least when he was on Fox, he was all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, when coming into this time of the year where he was doing baseball and football, and sometimes we kept saying, like, you know, remember the one time there was a game, football game in L.A. and the Dodgers were in the World Series a little bit later. It's like, oh, you could do both, Joe.
You could do both, right.
Go for it, Joe.
He's been one of the, again, one of those plum broadcasters. And
yeah, now he only has a job that's one day a week.
But he's like, you know what would be fun? If I interviewed people. Like, if I sat down with people, not just sports people, just different people, and talked to them. And I would love to do that. Like,
honestly,
all I do is 1st and 10 at the 32. Here, back to throw goes Rodgers. Fires over the middle. Like, I've been doing that for my whole life.
Yeah.
Or 2-2 pitch. Down the line. It's fair. I'd love to get somebody in a room and chat with them.
Well, I mean, it was funny. He doesn't even do baseball. He was the voice. I mean, he was our baseball voice.
But he did golf. He was a USGA announcer.
Kind of.
But they want, but they want to do other things. If you are Vanna White, there's no other thing. They don't want you for other stuff. You're not hosting a show. You're not going to be in a movie. You're not going to sing. You're not going to do anything. You're just going to turn letters. That's all you're going to do. So, game shows are awesome.
They are.
They really are. They're really remarkable. They really are remarkable. I mean, think about it. Most of the people that I was watching, they were like on vacation. They were in Southern California. They had a chance to see a taping of a show, and they walked away with a stereo system, a car, and a trip to Acapulco. How great is that? And Barker was like, yep, what are we doing? All right, we got the good, the bad, the dumb coming up. I want to get into some college games this weekend. And I'm going to ask a big question. We're talking too much about Deion Sanders. I'm going to do a larger issue on that when we come back. It's Wake Up Call on Sportsman Radio.